Sam Levin drops by with a cool Mac Picks. We're giving away a power tune and a brand new contest. And we ask, is the iPod generation killing hi-fi? All that and more, My Mac Podcast 184.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And once again, we're back with the My Mac Magazine podcast. This is number 184. We want to thank Sam Levin for joining us this week with Cool Mac Picks. Hello, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great here. It's going to be even better when I find out what these cool products are. And last week, you talked about a contest, so I'm kind of interested to learn more about that. Free stuff for the listeners. Cool.
The contest is, we might as well get that out in the open so they can start peeing the website. It's with Scott Evest. So if you go to scottevest.com, you'll see the essential jacket. We're going to give away one of those, but we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the podcast or the broadcast. And so that's the contest. But just stay tuned or go to the website, check it out. We've got a number of things for Cool Mac Picks. One of them is a cool company called Futurisonics. Now, if you are an iPod person, or an audio enthusiast. You don't have to be an iPod person to listen to these or to use these. Futurisonics makes an array of really high-end earbuds. Some of them they call ear monitors. And I'm really into audio. I like good headphones. I'm sure all of you guys use different headphones than the ones that were supplied with your iPods, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So we've all tested a number of these different products. And I was fortunate enough to hook up with the folks at Futurisonics, and they make a product called the Atrio series. The Atrio series are these sleek cobalt blue earbuds. They're malleable so that they bend. Not only bend in the ear, but they also bend around the ear. So a lot of high-end earbuds do this these days. But these guys
can get it way down your ear canal.
Well, you don't have to stick them. You don't have to do that to get really good sound. That's what's impressive about these. They're not cheap, but nothing that's good is cheap. They're $199. They're called the M8s. M as in Mary, and they deliver a rich, rich audio bass response. And a lot of earbuds are clean and clear, but don't deliver that kind of richness. So that's something that I really want to touch on because that's something that's almost always missing in a number of these earbuds. And Futurisonics have been around for a while. A lot of musicians, rock stars, use these on stage. I mean, they have ones that are much, much more expensive. But for the money, I think these guys have done a very good job. And it comes complete with different ear sets that you can plug into your ear canal, a really nice carry pouch, a zipper carry pouch that you travel with, because I always travel with earbuds. And I just think they've done a very nice job. It's called the M8 Atrio series from Futurisonics. So if you go to Futurisonics, SONICS.com, you'll be able to check them out for yourself and see the array of different products that they do sell.
Do they work with the iPhone, or do you need the little adapter?
You have to have the adapter. I did ask them. I suspect they did not change it because we might see a change with the next iPhone 2.
Yeah, I got a feeling that we're going to as well.
I did too. So that's okay. It's not. That is not a detractor. In my opinion, if the product kicks butt, you carry that little adapter. I carry one. I have like three of them now, and I have one always lying around, one in two different bags. But I suspect it might change with the iPhone, and they might get rid of that whole need for the adapter. But check it out. You'll really like it.
Next That's up, the Futurisonics Atrio M8, $200. Check our website, Yep. Show 184 for the link to that. What's the next one, Sam?
Next one is our folks from DLO have come out with a number of different vent mounts. It's called the vent mount for the iPod Touch or iPhone, and it's a simple device that's made of plastic that clips onto your vent and holds your iPhone or iPod Touch. They make two separate versions called vent mounts, and it's $25 or $24.99. And it's just simple. It clicks right onto the vent of your car. And a number of companies have been making vent mount products, but not specifically for the iPhone. These are the folks that are first up. I haven't seen anyone else that's done this. And typically, DLO knows how to make peripherals for the iPod. They make cases. We've featured them many, many times on the show.
They've been right at the beginning when the iPhone really started exploding. They were right there making products for it.
So. Right, and now they're actually a subsidiary, a wholly owned subsidiary of Philips. So
they've got the money now.
They've got the backing, but they understand the iPod better than Philips does by far, in my opinion. That's one of the reasons.
That's not surprising a bit.
No, and that's probably why Philips bought them, because they understand that area of the personal electronics division. So check it out at DLO.com. I have a direct link we are supplying directly to the vent mount URL. That's from DLO. And then lastly, this is our giveaway, is from a company called Scott eVest. That's ScottEVest.com. They make a product called the Essential Jacket for both men and women. And it's a jacket that has a multitude of pockets. Actually, there's 19 compartments in the jacket. It comes in black, red, or desert sand color. And it allows you to store any PDA, camera, cell phone, smartphone, iPod, iPhone. I think you could store almost everything in this jacket. And what's cool about Scott eVest is they make the jacket so you wouldn't know from the outside, you wouldn't know that someone's carrying all that bulk.
That could be handy.
I have a rodeo jacket from them, and when I came up from the States recently, I had a ton of stuff in the jacket when I went through security, when I got off the plane, and literally it just looked like I was wearing a jacket. There was no way you could tell how much stuff I was carrying. It was amazing.
Right, and they've done some really cool stuff with their lining so that you can put – there's cable management built into the jackets. Scott eVest is – Scott is the founder, Scott Jordan. He early on understood that they needed to address this type of a market where people are carrying their electronics. So what do they do with those, and how do they fit their PDAs in certain pockets? How do you access those? I mean, the Secret Service, they use his jackets. Which is pretty cool. He can't really get into it because, of course...
Well, obviously, yeah.
And so that's kind of neat. I wish he would feature that. He makes, stuff that's less expensive. By the way, the jacket's $120.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. It comes in three different colors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he even makes stuff like what's called the tech hat. And the tech hat is a simple hat. It's got a zipper on the side that you could put your key or a credit card. But also it's got these loops in the back so that you can wrap your headphones around it and the headphones stay away from, flopping all over the place as far as the cords. So he really understands how to build the product around the user and what they're doing with their electronics as far as whether you're an iPod owner or any. If you're wearing a headphone, this is the type of hat that you want. I've been using it for about 6 to 8 months. And I wear hats all the time, especially when I'm running. But what we're going to do as the giveaway, we're going to give a Scott eVest Essential Jacket away today.
Lucky $120 giveaway. A prize.
Oh, yeah. Now, it's the only specifics here, or the caveat is the MyMac listener has to be within the United States. We can't ship it outside the United States. So... Tim, how do you want to do this?
We're going to do it the same way we've done every contest so far. Send an email to tim@mymac.com. If you're not sure how to spell Scott eVest, come close and we'll call it good. put Scotty Vest contest in the subject line, and in the body of the message, and this is important, put your name, address, phone number, so we have that contact information.
All right, you'll go on to the we're going to give you the exact link for the Scotty Vest Essential jacket. You can look. There's measuring. There's a measuring chart there that will tell you what size to order and what color. It's all listed there. It's pretty cool.
So it comes in black lava, red rock, and desert sand. Right. And it looks like the sizes go from small all the way up to extra, extra, extra large tall for someone like Guy Searle.
Right, it's guy-sized.
It's guy-sized.
And we've actually placed an extra link. We're going to list there where Scott has, in the last few weeks, migrated from a Windows machine to a Mac machine. So he did a complete video, and he posted it on YouTube, and he said, hey, do you want that? I said, absolutely. So we're putting that link, so you'll be able to see Scott. He'll show, you know, Scotty Vest products. He's on the site. If you go on the site, you'll see he's listed all over the place. He models this stuff. He used to be a model in college as well. So,
oh, so that's him actually wearing it in the picture?
The guy that's wearing the jacket is not Scott. But in other photos, if you go to Scotty Vest, he's down there to the right where it says SEV blog. That's Scott, bottom right. He's got his hands clasped, and he's wearing a Scotty Vest vest. And he's a character, but he understands how to build these clothing, this type of clothing for people like us. And nowadays, it's not just people like us, which I call us nerds. It's people that are just using technology.
Geeks.
No, it's just geeks. Anyone using technology. That's about almost everyone.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. There's the contest. It'll be good for the next, week?
Yep. What we need is, let me pull up my iCal, because next week we're actually recording a day early. Are you going to be with us next week, Guy Searle? I know sometimes that's a problem.
Yeah, no, I've got Taekwondo that night with the kids.
Okay.
I am.
You have to get your submissions in by May 20th. If you send it on May 20th, that's fine, but if you send it after May 20th, you can't win, so... Mm-hmm. That's the rule. You have to have it in before May 20th.
And next week, there's a special Cool Mac Picks from Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Yes, I'll be there.
And you'll be in Notre Dame.
I'll be in South Bend, which is basically next. Where I'm going to be is next door to Notre Dame, but we can call it the Notre Dame edition or the Indiana.
I'm going to call it the Rudy. Rudy.
It's
Rudy.
Yeah. It's the Indiana version.
That's right.
That's where I'm from.
Oh, you're from Indiana.
Yes. The breadbasket.
And you moved out to San Francisco.
I moved out to Marin County. Actually, I'm 20 miles north of San Francisco. Close enough.
So you had so much money in your pocket, you thought, where's the most expensive real estate I can afford?
Well, that's not true, because I moved here 27 years ago. And luckily, 10 years ago, I was able to move here before the real estate went really crazy. But we don't want to get into that.
No. So again, email to tim@mymac.com, Scotty Vest in the subject line, name, address, and phone number in the message body. If you are randomly selected as our winner, you're going to win a very cool $120 Scotty Vest. And thanks very much, Sam, for setting that up for us.
You got it, guys.
We're going to jump over to John Nemirovsky really quick.
Go, John.
He's got a All Over the Mac, and it's Ann Bowden. And we'll be right back.
We're back here on the My Mac podcast, and our segment is called All Over the Mac. We're delighted to have a new interviewee, and her name is Ann Bowden. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, John.
How many years have you been using Macintosh?
Since either 89 or 91 or 2.
How many Macs have you had during that time?
5.
And which is your favorite one that you've had before now, not counting the ones you have now?
Well, I loved the first one a lot because it was so different from the huge PC I had that had cost $2,000 and was just a real dinosaur after 6 months. I bought the first Mac, believe it or not, at Walmart in the days when they were selling everything American. There was a big banner across their store, Buy American. Now you can't find anything from the U.S. in there. But they were selling Macs, the kind that they used in the schools, the eMac would be the equivalent now. And I loved that because it was such a change from the old PC that I had.
Was that a laptop or a desktop Mac?
It was a desktop, all one piece.
Oh, and a Performa.
Yeah, that was it. That mm-hmm. was it. And it was a great little machine for the time. The screen was, I don't know, 4 inches square or something, but it was great. We loved it.
And what Macs do you have right now, singular or plural?
We have an eMac, an iMac, and a MacBook because we live in two different places, and that's why we have so many.
Well, presumably you don't carry the iMac and the eMac back and forth from the one place to the other.
No, that's why I got the MacBook, so that I could have my own computer. My husband is a computer hog, so I needed my own in both houses, so that now I can take the MacBook back and forth.
So is it correct to say that the iMac stays in one place, the eMac stays in another place, and the MacBook travels back and forth?
Correct. That's exactly right.
Is this the first year that you're doing that, or have you done that before? The MacBook's fairly new.
No, this is the first year we will have done it, yeah.
How did you manage the data going back and forth before to make sure that your data was synced from one town to another, from one computer to another?
Well, you're asking me a technical question that my husband deals with. We have a gizmo that has, I think, two hard drives on it, and he copies the computer here and then takes it up to Oregon and puts it on that computer. So they're synced.
So it's some sort of super duper or data transfer.
Exactly. Yes, that's what it's called.
Very good. Okay, let's talk about your new computer. How long have you had this MacBook?
Since March. So 2 months.
And it's a MacBook, not a MacBook Pro, correct?
MacBook, yeah.
What color is it?
White.
Did you get it because it's white? Was the color a big factor?
No, not at all. It was the screen size that I wanted. The Mac Pro is more expensive, and I didn't need that.
Now, presumably you're in the over 40 age group, right?
Well, yes, very much so.
So is the small screen size a problem for someone with mature eyes?
Not since I discovered holding my finger on the apple and hitting the plus. It makes everything just fine. I don't even need glasses to read. So I like it. And when I go to the iMac now, my husband's iMac, it just looks like CinemaScope. I can hardly deal with it.
Let's hear about the MacBook. There are a couple of different models of the white MacBook. How did you decide which one to get?
Well, I decided to get to the most basic one only because I don't need a whole lot of storage space. I don't do enough on it that I need all that. What's it called?
Well, hard drive space.
Hard drive
capacity.
Space. Right. So that's why I bought it. And then I used the $200 I saved on buying a nice new keyboard and mouse. And maybe I'll even get a big screen for it, too.
At the moment, are you primarily using an external keyboard and mouse with your MacBook?
Yes, I can't quite get used to the touch method of clicking on things. I use the mouse.
What about the glare screen? Do you have any trouble with the glare off that reflective glass screen?
Well, I did, and then I just fiddled around with moving it back and forth, and it's fine. If you tilt it a certain way, you lose that glare, so it's okay.
Have you moved it at all, or does it just sit in one place on a stationary desk?
No, sometimes I take it out on the patio, and I do stuff out there. It's very movable.
Yeah. And what about the wireless airport network? Are you able to pick up your network easily?
It isn't airport that we have. We have Linux?
Linksys.
Linksys. And it works perfectly. I can take it much farther away from the source than I thought I would be able to. Mm. And goes through walls, just like an airport.
And have you traveled with it yet?
No, just to the Apple store and back a couple of times.
Oh, it's brand new. How long have you had it?
2 months.
And it's already been to the Apple store? What happened?
Well, I inserted a homemade CD, music CD, into it about the second day I had it, and it started to rattle and make a terrible noise and vibrate. I knew there was something wrong. I ejected the disc. I tried a photo disc. It did the same thing. It worked pretty much quieter with a a store-bought disc. But anyway, there was something the matter, and I went over to the Apple store with it. I didn't have an appointment. I was leaving town, and I didn't have an appointment at the Genius Bar, and I got there at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they said, well, they were full up till 1 o'clock. And I said, well, what if I just hang around for a while? And so they put me on the waiting list, and sure enough, somebody didn't show up, and I got right in there. And the technician tried the disc and agreed that it was not normal. And he fiddled around with it, and the discs worked fine in the store computer. So he said to leave it with him, and he'd see what the problem was, and he'd either fix it or give me a new computer.
Was this upsetting since you were getting ready to go on a trip?
Not really, because I had no intention of taking the machine with me, and this way I wasn't losing it while I was away anyway. I didn't need to worry about how long it took them to fix it.
What happened when you came back from your trip?
Well, as it turned out, the guy who had helped me had been away sick himself, and nobody had looked at the computer since I left. They were very apologetic, and Gabe was his name, looked at it again with me, and he said, well, I know there's something wrong. He said the simplest thing would be not to give you a new computer, but if it's okay with you, I'll switch the hard drive, and I think it will take care of the problem. So that's what he did, and it worked just fine.
Well, let me review this. Your computer worked fine, but the optical drive was weird. So he didn't replace the optical drive, and he didn't give you an entirely new computer completely. He took out your old hard drive, not transferring the data off, but he physically removed the hard drive from your original computer and put that original hard drive into a brand new computer from which he had taken out its original hard drive. So you now had a brand new computer with your original hard drive and a brand new optical drive. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's exactly what he did.
How has that computer behaved itself since then?
Perfectly. Not a problem.
Let's talk about the keyboard and the mouse. Which keyboard and mouse are you using?
I'm using the new keyboard. I'm not sure about the mouse. It's an older one that my daughter gave me. But it's fine. The keyboard, however, that new beautiful little aluminum keyboard, stopped functioning. It just printed Z's no matter what what key you hit, and it wouldn't let you type anything else. So I took that over to the Apple store sort of with my tail between my legs because I thought they're going to think I'm incompetent, and I was beginning to feel I was myself. He tried it on his computer, and it was working fine. And then he tried it on my computer, and the keys were sticking a little, but it wasn't just printing Z's. And he said, I don't know what's the matter with it. He said, I'll test it more later in the workroom, but in the meantime, just take a new piece, because if you get home and this happens again, you'll just have to drag over here, and we don't want that. So I felt very good about that, but I hope I don't have to go back to the Apple store again with any problems soon.
Had you made it up that time?
Yes, I had, and they were running absolutely on time. Well, actually, I was in there a little early, and I think I was out again in 5 minutes. But I went back because, in the meantime, my husband had used that new keyboard, and he loved it so much, I bought him one.
So they got a sale out of it.
Yeah, they did.
Where did you originally purchase your white MacBook?
Well, I didn't. My daughter purchased it for me in Oregon. She has an educator's discount and wanted me to take advantage of that. Plus, there's no sales tax in Oregon. So she was coming to visit me, and she bought it and brought it down to me.
What about the AppleCare 3-year service contract? Are you going to get that?
Yes, I am. I'm still on the 90 days, of course, but I'm going to get that soon.
What recommendations do you have for people who have trouble with their optical drives or their keyboards or any peripherals as far as getting in touch with Apple? Should they be intimidated, or should they immediately go to the Apple store with or without an appointment?
Absolutely go. Well, it's better with an appointment because I think I just got lucky the day somebody didn't show up. They are actually very busy, but it is a wonderful service, and they don't treat you like a novice or like an idiot, even though you might not know nearly as much as you wish you did.
You mentioned about the new keyboard for your husband. Is he going to take this new keyboard when he goes to your traveling location to use on the eMac that's in the other location?
Yes, he is. He likes it that much.
Do you think he'll leave it there and get another one when he comes back here for the iMac?
I don't know. He might.
He could always just bring it back with him.
Yeah, right. We drive, so it fits in the car.
What does he think of using your MacBook? Have you allowed him to touch that?
Well, yesterday we had words because I couldn't get on my MacBook, which I bought specifically so I could use it. But what he was doing was very worthwhile. As it turned out, a friend was having a birthday party, and he was making a slideshow for it and adding music, and he could do it better on my computer than on his.
Do you notice any difference when you go back and forth from the eMac to the iMac to the MacBook? Do you actually feel a sense of progress using the new Leopard operating system and all the new iLife applications?
Well, I don't go back to the iMac very much now because he's on it all the time. But no, I don't. I guess I don't use all that many of the Leopard features because I don't notice that much difference between his and mine.
Well, thank you very much for being an interviewee here on All Over the Mac at the MyMac podcast. We hope that's the last time you need an appointment at the Apple Store, and we congratulate you on your new purchase and all of your service and all of your success.
Thanks very much, John.
Thanks very much, John Nemo, for the All Over the Mac segment, and thanks again to Sam Levin for supplying us with a brand new company to give away their products. We absolutely love giving stuff away that we don't have to buy. So we're joined by Guy Searle from Virginia now. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Tim. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
Dave Cohen from the UK. You guys were here during Sam's Cool Mac Picks. You said you actually have one of these coats, David?
I do. I have the... Well, in fact, I've got two. I've got the Rodeo jacket. And I have also have the fleece, the SEV fleece, and they really are. As I was saying, the amazing thing about them is you can put all this stuff in them, and it kind of just disappears. I mean, it just doesn't. You know, it's not bulky. You can't feel it hanging on. You can't feel it moving.
Yeah, I've had coats with a lot of pockets, but it always kind of pulls on my shoulders. It just kind of. Yeah, and this doesn't do that, though.
Doesn't do that. And also, as Sam was saying, they have all these loops and hooks, so you can, you know, you can put little things. You can hide your wallet in there, you can hide your cell phone, you can hide your iPod, and nothing will bang into anything else. Nothing will rub over anything else. You can put sunglasses, it doesn't matter what it is. They've thought of a pocket for everything. And also, you can route cables around and have the headphones come up out the collars, go straight into your ears. They've really thought of everything. They are very, very nice.
Now, you're a pretty tall guy, Mr. Searle.
Yes.
Do you have a problem finding jackets that fit you well?
Yes, I do. Typically, once or twice a year when we're in the area, there's a couple of big and tall stores that I go to. And, you know, that's really almost the only place that I can buy clothes because I'm both big and tall.
Big and tall. Well, maybe you'll have to look at a Scotty vest. I mean, sounds pretty cool. I mean,
and it's actually not a bad price. I think it was...
No, $120 isn't bad.
Yeah, well, it's an extra $10 for the big and tall size. But, you know, frankly, that's not that big a deal.
No, I don't think so either. Last week, John Nemirovsky worked out a deal with McAlley for us to give away a Power Tune. And we're going to announce the winner right now. The winner already knows because I left a message on his iPhone. So he already knows he won. But nobody else does, so let's announce that. It's the American Idol Dave Cook.
Yay!
Way to go, Dave.
I don't think he's actually the guy from American Idol, although he did send this from his iPhone. Hmm. So technically, he could be the American Idol Dave Cook. Actually, I think that's David Cook, isn't it, on American Idol?
David.
Same thing. That's right.
Welcome.
But, yeah, I don't think it's him. But he's from New York. He won the Power Tune. It's an all-in-one battery pack, speaker, protective case, and stand for the iPod. Looks really cool. John Nemo gave it a 4 out of 5 back in November, so congratulations, Dave.
Excellent.
We love giving away stuff that we don't have to pay for.
That's the best part.
Speaking of money, we do have a sponsor for the show. We're going to have a sponsor, the same sponsor for at least a year, hopefully longer. Well, you never know. If your company is interested in sponsoring our podcast or our website, send any inquiries to tim@mymac.com. But the sponsor for this show is Otherworld Computing. Very good company.
Great company.
Of course, two shows ago, we had Larry on. He's the CEO and founder of Otherworld Computing. Great guy, great company. We're really happy that they're a sponsor, not because we need the money, and obviously we do, but because it's a company that we can really get behind in promoting their products and their services and their company. And David, you actually picked a product from them this week that you really like.
I did. I was. People who've listened to the podcast regularly know, I've just got an Apple TV, and I'm really big on my Apple TV. I also have a DVR, an English DVR that picks up the digital TV channels we can get over the air over here. The problem I've always had with the DVR is that I can't get the shows off it to watch them anywhere else. I can't get them onto my iPod.
You're stuck watching them.
Exactly. I've got to watch them on the TV. And, I like to watch a lot of shows on the go. I travel a lot for business. So I was looking into how to solve that, and I found this product's bundle on MacSales.com, which I think is absolutely going to do the job. So I've got the two devices, and they really, really are very good. What it is the Elgato ITV Hybrid and a Turbo.264 bundle. Now, Elgato are specialists in TV tuners and that sort of thing. And
they're probably the leaders, at least on the Mac side, of providing television on your Mac.
Absolutely. And having used some of this stuff in the Windows world, I can tell you that their software, their ITV software that comes with these devices, is top-notch as well. So what you get with this bundle, it's $199, and you get an ITV Hybrid. And that's a two-in-one TV tuner. So that can either take over-the-air digital TV in HD, or it can take standard analog TV. It's got both connectors on it. You connect up to your cable box or whatever, plug that into your Mac, load up ITV, and you basically have you turn your Mac into a very high-quality DVR. You can just watch TV live on your Mac, or you can record it and schedule it, and it will save it to your hard drive. However, they've bundled this with the Turbo.264, and that's another USB dongle that gives you a hardware H.264 video encoder. And this thing really is amazing. If you've got, particularly if you've got an older Mac, a G4 Mac, say a Mac Mini or something like that, this will give you really world-class encoding speeds. And because they're both from Elgato, they just work together. So you can record TV and have the Turbo.264 will encode it on the fly as it's recorded, so it's ready to watch on your Apple TV or your iPod or your iPhone or a PSP or anything like that. And the files just get dropped straight into iTunes as you record them. So it really is that.
How do they plug into your Mac?
They're just USB. So
and they both plug into a USB port.
That's right. Yeah.
Any problem plugging these into like a USB hub?
Nope. I've got them. Got mine on a USB hub, and they work fine. Hmm. So no issues at all. The thing is with the ITV tuner is it's basically taking the digital signal as it comes through the aerial socket and recording that straight to the hard drive, and then the Turbo.264 is picking that up and encoding it on the fly. So
They work together at the same time.
They do. They work together at the same time, and the software is designed so they know about each other and will just work straight away. So particularly if you've got a G4 or G5, you'll get at the absolute best encoding speeds with H.264, which looks really nice when you play it back.
And so, with the ITV, you can actually set a schedule just like you can a DVR.
Exactly, yeah.
I've noticed, though, that it does use a web-based system. But you can adjust that so you can record it for an extra hour if, a soccer match or a football match is coming on right before the program you want to watch. You want to make sure you get the whole thing. You could tell it to record an extra hour
and
stuff like that.
And most of the digital TV services now actually have programming information in the digital stream, and you can set it to use that if you don't want to use the web service. So you'll still get the on-screen electronic program guide that allows you to set your programs and everything.
Yeah, the last time I used it, it was a web-based solution, and it was very clunky, but this was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, it uses Titan TV, which is the American service, or if you're elsewhere in the world, that will use TV, which is a European-type service. But as I say, it will work on any information that's in the TV stream as well, and that's how I have mine set. I don't use the web services at all.
So it does 720p and 1080i HDTV.
That's right, yeah.
And then, of course, standard analog.
Yeah. So, you know, the fact it will take either digital or analog TV means that, you know, that's a really nice solution because you're covering all the bases there.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're into DVR and you've got a computer, then this is really good for you. And what's nice is Other World Computing are bundling the two together. And you're saving a bit of money on that, and you're getting a really nice integrated solution for $200, which I don't think is bad at all, really.
For what you're going to get. If you want to consume a lot of television programming or movies, if you're recording movies off the air too, and you want to watch it either on your Apple TV, on your iPod, on your PSP, on your iPhone, on your iPod Touch, this is going to be a really good solution to get the best quality video off the air that you can get.
And you're getting ITV with that as well, which is the really, really great software package for the ITV hardware. And if you're one of these people who doesn't like watching commercials, it's really easy and quick to edit commercials out of the stuff you've recorded. And
of course, anybody wanting to buy it is encouraged to go to mymac.com. Find show 184 and click the link to Other World Computing. We're going to link directly to this product.
Yep.
You were talking about editing a little bit there, Dave.
Yeah, I was just saying if you want to cut the commercials out of your TV before you watch it on your iPhone or whatever, then it's really easy to do that with ITV. You just basically set in and out points and then tell it to cut it, and it just removes it straight away, and you can...
So it's basic video editing as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, can you also just drop it into iMovie?
You could do that after you've...
It's an MPEG-2 file, correct?
It saves the MPEG-2 stream, so you might need to load a codec up onto your like Perian or something to be able to use it in iMovie. I've done it with iMovie 06. I've never used the latest version of iMovie to do that, so I don't know how well that would work.
I don't know why you'd really want to be honest. If it's something that you're going to record a television program and then watch it later. I don't know if you would really need to bring it into iMovie to mess with it.
Yeah, I guess only if you wanted to take something and then repurpose it to use it somewhere else. You know, take a clip through. Yeah. If you want to get rid of commercials, you can just do it in ITV. There's no need to go to iMovie because ITV really is the interface is very slick. And it's got the timeline there, and you can literally select frame by frame, so you can just cut the commercials away nice and easily.
So that is $200 from Other World Computing. And we'll be right back with Is the iPod Generation Killing Hi-Fi? And we're back, and we're joined by two additional people here on the podcast. First up is our semi-regular Lee Gibbons. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Tim. How's everybody doing?
We're doing well. I know you've been pretty busy. AOL just released the final version of the AOL desktop client for the Macintosh, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. So I know you've been pretty busy.
Yeah, the developers are happy because once they finish, they're all taking vacations, doing things. But when you're the product guy, it's showtime.
It's showtime. Now it's time for you to start working. And also joining us, since we're going to be talking about audio and is the iPod generation killing high fidelity, we've got the publisher of iProng magazine, Bill Palmer. Hello, Hello, Bill.
Oh, is this a podcast? I was just wandering around looking for the bathroom.
I sounded kind of professional there for a minute, and then I kind of blew it, yeah. So you basically transformed iProng from a website, which, it's still a website, but the focus really now is the iProng magazine, right?
Yeah, and that's happened a lot quicker and more thoroughly than I thought. It's just we really seem to have, you know, caught on to something with the magazine and people responding to, so we've kind of quickly revamped the website and the podcast to be, you know, part of where the magazine is going. Is I thought it would be vice versa when I first started it out.
You got a lot of very popular musicians and one non-musician cover. I mean, you're getting interviews with the big names out there.
Yeah, it's starting to build now. I guess once you land your first big name and then all the other big names, you know, see that you didn't really screw it up or anything, or that you got a response or whatever, it does get easier to land them. People think these are all my best friends, so, you know, most of these people wouldn't know me if they walked up to them on the street, because all I did was talk to them on the phone for 15 minutes, one of 10 interviews they did that day. But
yeah,
still a lot
of
fun.
I mean, that's pretty cool. We're trying to line up our first – well, a lot of people say Gil Amelia was probably our biggest interview to date, but we do have God coming on pretty soon. So we think that's going to turn the podcast around. It's going to be huge after we get God
on. Yeah, but he does every podcast. So
well, he has that like, this is God. Welcome to – you know, and you listen to that, and it sounds cool for a minute. You know, like, hi, how you doing out there? You know, that sounds cool for a minute, but then after about a half hour, you're like, oh, come on. You know, it gets a little annoying, but anyway.
See, I thought you were making a shorthand reference to Steve Jobs when you said God, so I was
No, we mean our Lord and Savior, Bill.
We have Steve
Lord
Jobs
and
as well.
Bill. I like how you phrase that.
Yeah. Yes. We have Steve Jobs as well. He calls Sam Levin every week during the
week. Yeah. Right during the podcast, he always calls Sam Levin to find out what we're talking about.
You'll never get Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs, but, you know, God, no big deal.
Oh, well, God's, he's easy. I mean, you know, he's got a PR problem right now, so he's looking to get the word out.
He's not as busy as Steve Jobs, that's
no,
why.
No, definitely not. Well, creation only took him 7 days.
Well, exactly. One product release, and then he's been on vacation ever since.
That's right.
Right.
One greatest hit, and then he's gone.
But let's be honest, guys. I think even a service pack. Yeah, but let's be honest. I think the product is still in beta. I'm just saying.
I mean, 7 days, spent 1 day to create the Earth and 6 days trying to find the typo in his RSS feed. So,
well,
I think he's just like the rest of us.
Well, the problem is, though, he didn't create light at the beginning. So, I mean, that's half of it. He created the Earth and the heavens and all that, and then he created light. Maybe it would have been better had he created the light first so he could see what he was doing. I mean, that might explain the platypus.
Well, part of the problem was he was trying to code with CSS and just wasn't working.
I know, and it was definitely a JavaScript world. That's, you know, that's all I'm saying. Okay, there's enough of that. Probably offended a good quarter of our audience right there.
Click!
Click. We don't need to listen to that show anymore. So let's talk about this a little bit. Not God. Not God. Let's talk about... I'm glad I have my mix board back, aren't you?
I'm getting more and more happy about it all the time. Yes.
We're going to start with Bill Palmer. Bill, when the iPod came out, a lot of people have thought that this was just going to be a passing fad. It wasn't going to catch on. And I've said this right at the beginning, and I've repeated it on the show. I didn't think the iPod would catch on, and I thought Sony would come out with a product and kill Apple. Obviously, I and a lot of the other detractors at the beginning were wrong. Now that the iPod is what it is, and so many people are listening to this device to listen to all their music, where does hi-fi fit in? And from your perspective, talking to these musicians, do they see the iPod generation killing high fidelity?
You know, what I actually find is most of these rock stars, they got iPods themselves, and they're buying stuff from iTunes, and I've yet to have someone come on, and maybe they're just being diplomatic because we're the iPod people and they don't want to say it to us, but, you know, I've yet to have someone come on and say, well, this is ruining our music. Now, granted, I don't really interview classic musicians or whatever. It's usually rock stars, but I think it's just a whole shift, really. Like, from, it seems for better or worse, everything in technology is shifting from the 1% to the 99%, which is sort of top 1%, whether it's the most technical people on computers getting easier or the biggest audio files, that's shifting down to the rest of us who think 128 AAC sounds great and can't really hear a difference, you know, from an uncompressed CD. So, you know, really not getting that kind of feedback. And again, they could just be keeping their mouth shut about it. But, you know, they all seem to just be happy that people are getting hold of their music and kind of paying for it again.
Lee, did you ever have a hi-fi system?
Yeah, when I was growing up, you know, I was a military kid, so growing up in Germany, there was this whole subculture of people who just really, you know, got into their clips and all the, you know, the Macintosh amplifiers and you know, starting to get it, you know, CDs were coming into focus then, and I remember, you know, I spent a lot of time I just loved it all, you know, the whole, you know, high fidelity thing, you know, learning as much as I can about how sound is reproduced. And but nowadays, I find myself not reading Stereo Magazine and things like that anymore. So
I don't even think they exist, do they?
Yeah, I haven't seen one in years. So
We
still have a magazine over here called What Hi-Fi that that you can buy. But it's certainly, I mean, the thing is, I think computers have taken over a lot of that sort of techno niche that a lot of people used to be into with hi-fi.
I get a lot of, I've done a lot of interviews in the past, and a lot of people ask me, why did you start My Mac Magazine? And one of the reasons that I used to give was that I wanted to improve my writing skills because I wanted to become a writer in either one of two industries. I either wanted to become a comic book writer, which a lot of people found surprising, or I wanted to write reviews for my favorite magazine, which was Stereo Review. I absolutely loved Stereo Review growing up in the 80s. To me, that was the best magazine. They had, you know, coverage of all the best equipment. And being an audiophile myself, I really could hear the difference between a crappy pair of speakers and something that cost a lot of money. Yep. But the sound quality was just unreal. So that's what I wanted to write for. Now, obviously, that never happened. That magazine's long gone, and I'm still writing about Macintosh computers. But that's one of the reasons I started MyMac, because I was excited about hi-fi and I wanted to write in that industry. That industry doesn't seem to be there anymore, Guy.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I've got this amazing 8-track collection that's just, it's been gathering dust.
You know, you say that in jest, but I've got a reel-to-reel, an Akai reel-to-reel 4-track that absolutely sounds beautiful. I mean, and I can put something like 16 hours of music on that reel-to-reel, and it sounds great. And I used to love to sit down and record from vinyl to my 8-track, or to my my 4-track, and make these party music tapes that I just loved. Nobody does that anymore. It's all done on the iPod now. And it's quick, and it's easy, but do you think it sounds as good?
Well, you know, to my almost 48-year-old ears, I'm one of those guys that really does have a problem telling the difference between, say, a 256K AAC file and something coming out of my CD. It has to be a pretty good system for me to be able to hear the difference. But, you know, if I was younger and my ears weren't quite so blown out from 70s rock concerts, you know, maybe I would be able to tell the difference.
Now, David, I know you recently purchased a HD TV flat panel,
right? I did, yeah.
If you don't mind asking, how much did you pay, or roughly?
Let's see. It was a cheapie. It's not a brand name. So I paid £375 for that from an online store called eBuy here in the UK. So about $700.
Did you upgrade your stereo equipment at the same time?
I don't have any stereo equipment connected to it.
So you're listening to everything through the TV speakers?
Listening to everything through the TV speakers. We do have a stereo in the living room, which I must admit, since we got into digital music probably about 5-6 years ago, we hardly ever turn it on. We just don't really use it very much at all.
So how do you listen to your music?
I listen to it on the iPod or on the computer.
On a dock speaker system?
I have a couple of portable speaker systems that I use. And now I do have a very nice set of speakers that I've got hooked into my Mac. So if I crank those up, then it's kind of semi-hi-fi, but obviously the room that my Mac's in is my office, so it's not really an ideal room for listening to audio. I mean, when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, I was into hi-fi in a big way. I had all separates. I used to carefully look at speakers and amps and CD players and tape drives and everything to try and make sure that I was matching my equipment properly. And it all sounded really good. It didn't look very good because it was all different sizes and shapes and colors, but it did sound very good. And, all of that has been lost. I think what started the drive away from hi-fi was the wash of really cheap audio systems that came out in the late 80s, early 90s before MP3 really got going. And let's face it, you know, if you're knocking out a system with a CD and a double tape and a radio tuner and maybe a turntable on it for a couple of $100, the quality of all of that is going to be pretty poor. And I think that was when people started moving away from listening to really good quality, high fidelity audio reproduction.
What do you think, Lee? Do you have a hi-fi system in your home?
Well, the hi-fi, I left it at my mom's house. So, I do listen to music now. I use AirTunes over Airport Express in a couple different mm-hmm. rooms. I have a small subwoofer and a couple of speakers connected to it. That's what I use for the television also. But most of the time, all my music playing is just, I bought a good set of headphones for my iPhone.
So it sounds like I'm probably the only person in this group right now that has a true hi-fi system with a surround sound and all that. Anybody else have
one in my office?
Yeah, I've got some components, you know, some various stereo components. But honestly, I haven't fired them up in a very, very long time. There just hasn't been any real need to.
I'm finding that to be true more often than not nowadays. I have relatives that will buy an HDTV, and they're listening to it, the sound anyways, through the speakers and the television. And to them, that sounds just fine. You know, they don't know any better. They think that that's the way it's supposed to sound. Well, the speakers are in the TV. Yeah, that's how it sounds. And then they come over here and they watch my HDTV. Now, I've got an older HDTV. It's actually a CRT. In other words, it's a great, big, huge thing in the back.
The Godzilla of my picture, high-definition television.
Yes, but... Right, but my picture quality, quite honestly, is better than the flat panels because it's a CRT. I mean, it's the black is black. I mean, it looks fantastic. When you watch an HD signal on my television, you're like, wow, that looks really good. But to be quite honest, I don't usually watch HDTV, usually just standard. However, that being said, I do have a surround sound system. I really, really like it. I don't usually listen to music in there anymore. My hi-fi system is a surround sound system. It's Paradigm speakers. I mean, the two towers in the front, I spent $1,000 a piece for those back in the early 90s before I was married, of course, with kids. And, you know, and then I added a Paradigm center channel and then rear channel, and I've got a real nice Onkyo deck, THQ, and, you know, it's a nice system. It sounds great. So when I have people come over to watch HD and I turn on the stereo, and that's the only way I'll listen to it, I don't know if the speakers in my TV even work. And they hear it and they go, wow, that makes a huge difference. And it starts changing people's opinion. So my question is, to me, when I do that to people, especially my relatives, it kind of convinces them that they probably should get a surround sound system. Do you think surround sound digital television theater systems, this is going to build, do you think that's going to rescue hi-fi at all?
It could. I mean, you know, the trend you see a few years ago, you'd walk into the electronics store and every TV in there was a $200 25-inch CRT. Now you walk in, it's like even in Walmart, $800, $1,000 TV. So with the market shifting back like that, I mean, this HDTV thing is not a niche or not just a fad. That's the thing for a few years. So it very well could. But then again, more and more people are buying from iTunes, and, you know, and it's 28.
But I think that the Apple TV with the ability, well, actually, that's the only way you can hook it up is if you have a television that has either, what is it, component or HDMI. That's the only way you can hook up an Apple TV, so you have to have a high-definition signal. If you're going to spend that much money on a television, wouldn't it make sense to spend at least half of as much on in a nice sound system?
Maybe. But then there's, you know, I go over to my mom and stepdad's house, and they got their HDTV turned so loud and so booming that I have to get up and walk out of the room every half an hour for a couple of minutes. I mean, literally, it's that loud. So.
But isn't that, though, because they have to turn it up because those TV speakers really aren't designed to fill a room unless you turn it up and then you start getting distortion? If they had a real nice surround sound system, they probably wouldn't have to turn it up as much.
Yeah, with some separation.
Yeah. I mean, it fills the room at that point, so you don't need the quite loud volume as you would with just the television speakers.
Have you guys ever tried one of those Yamaha systems where it does surround, but from one single center channel speaker?
I've listened to them and they sound okay, and I think those would probably work best in a smallish room.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have a real surround sound system, it really doesn't work.
It sounds great when you're at CES and you're sitting in the booth, sitting down, and you're like, wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, then take
I
it
think
home
that's the thing. At trade shows, they tune the booth to make the best use of the algorithm that the device is using. And, you know, I mean, if you just stick it in an ordinary room, I mean, it could be doing anything. So,
well, they do that, though, with television as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You go to a big box reseller, and the contrast and the brightness is turned way up on those televisions, and then you get up home. If you set the same settings, it'll blind you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very deceptive the way they set up televisions and sound systems in stores and CESs and places like that. So nobody here other than me has a true hi-fi system. Do you think, Lee, that it's because of the iPod, or do you think there's mitigating factors?
I think it's gotten to the point where it's good enough for a lot of people. And I was just thinking, the only place I have surround sound now, I've done some wiring in the past, so I could put it in, but right now it has a lot of kids' toys in my future home theater. But the only place I have a really good music or surround sound system is actually my car. I just thought about it. It's the only place I actually have a 5.1 surround.
It sounds pretty good in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has it has a DVD audio, and I bought a few. They only had maybe 8 or 9 at the store, and I bought a couple of them, and it sounds great when I play those discs.
Yeah, I think DVD audio is one of those formats that's...
It's not going to go anywhere.
No, I think it's on life support at this point.
But I think, I mean, that actually kind of illustrates the point. I mean, you've got to remember that when we moved away from records to CD, at the time, I remember everybody, the real audiophiles were saying, oh, hang on a minute, you're throwing all this information out of the audio signal. It doesn't sound right. It's not good. Of course, now we look at CD as the reference standard and say, CD is the best you can get. And
well, some people say that. I don't say that. I've been saying since the beginning of the CD revolution in the 80s, and I still say it now, you're not going to reproduce an analog signal digitally to have it sound as warm and as full as you do from a really nice turntable with a real nice stylus. That's premium audio, and I have yet to hear any current equipment match that. The stuff that I heard even back in the 80s, it sounded...
Most people haven't heard that audio reproduction. I mean, I agree with you, Tim. I mean, I've heard, a friend of mine had a really high-end audio system. He, when he turned 18, he got access to a trust fund, and he was into hi-fi, and, he dropped a few £1,000 on a really, really nice set of components. And listening to music over at his place, that was really what allowed you to hear the difference between what you could buy for a couple of hundred and what happened when you spent quite a bit more. But most people have never heard that, so they kind of don't really know what they're missing. And the other thing as well is most people have been brought up by sticking earbuds deep into their ear, and so they're hearing shot anyway. So, it's very difficult to distinguish the difference if you've never heard it or your hearing's not really up to scratch.
Yeah, or lots of Blue Oyster Cult concerts like I did.
Well, I went to a lot of concerts, but it doesn't seem to have any effect on my ears. I still I have really good hearing still. Bill, one of the things that I've heard from some interviews with some musicians is that when they're recording the music, they have kind of an idea of what it's going to sound like, but what's happening now is the engineers are kind of engineering all the sound volumes very close together because they know that this is all going to be compressed music anyways, so they don't have to spend as much time in the studio, like a Dark Side of the Moon album where, probably 95% of the album was done in after it was recorded. They're not going to that level of detail anymore. Do you hear anything about that from the musicians that you've interviewed, or that just hasn't really come up at all?
Not in interviews. I've had stuff told that to me privately by friends that are up and coming recording artists and such. I think it's always been true that the art itself is dictated by the medium, whether anybody wants to admit it or not. Like now that I'm writing for the magazine, I instinctively write longer articles than I would for the web. Because I can do that. I can make it 8 pages. And if the web page, people aren't going to keep scrolling down or whatever. Any art you create. It's going to be...
Yeah.
What's that?
Back after the jump.
Yeah. Well, the attention span that people have for a magazine, I think, would be a lot longer than on a web page.
Right, but it's kind of the same kind of thing you're saying with recording. If you know people aren't going to hear it anyway, you're going to do that. And so the same way that when we went from the cassette to the compact disc, albums got longer. Because it could be. And so now we got people making an album that's 74 minutes, and somebody comes out with, REM comes out with a 34-minute album, and everybody says, you can't do that, that's only like a half an album. Well, no, if this was 1982, 34 minutes would be a full-length album. So sure. I think always the technology and the formats we have and are going to influence. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that bands are sticking to the middle stuff that people are actually going to hear.
Do you think that this is going to lead to more processed type of music? If that makes any sense, more synthetics, I guess you'd say.
It could. I mean,
less musicianship.
That would be the worst case, you know, the sort of the most cynical way of looking at it. I think the optimistic side might be saying, well, maybe they're going to spend less time futzing around with all this stuff in the studio and spend more time on their songwriting and maybe just make better melodies, you hope. And it could shift, like I was saying with the TV thing where, you know, all of a sudden TVs are going high-end and they're more expensive again. This whole thing, we could shift back to where a couple of years from now iTunes is selling uncompressed music because we got all the bandwidth in the hard drive space. So it's just, you know, it always shifts back and forth, even though you think it's never going to shift back again. It always does eventually.
I've kind of looked at it as before, when we were basically spoon-fed the music that we're going to listen to by the record companies, whatever they said was good and
right.
and going to get released, that's what we heard. Now with the internet and the iPod generation and iTunes, we can be very selective on what we want. And the artists can really reach their audience, as
worldwide.
Somebody like Nine Inch Nails has proved recently. They can go directly to their listener and make a lot of money doing so. So the best is going to rise, where the crap is just going to fall off. But because it's such a larger bucket of music, even the crap has a place to flourish nowadays. Nobody?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I you know, it doesn't bear out in the numbers. Sales are down. And I don't know how that correlates to what I'm about to say, but I think there are a lot more people that are interested in music right now. Even if they're buying smaller amounts of music, I think they're spreading out, like you said, and they're finding things. And it's not just the Nine Inch Nails that already got famous before they went indie. There's bands like these bands that show up at PodCamp and stuff that they're just making the album. They don't even want to go near a label. They don't even want a publicist or none of that. And they're just selling CDs out of their bag, and they can actually go and have a CD made up that looks like it's professional. Of course, when you get into iTunes, it doesn't matter at all. You have no idea, except maybe they don't have as many comments, and you have no idea that somebody is not famous and unsigned and recorded in their own basement.
So, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I think you've got to remember, Bill, that when people say sales are down, that's when the labels say that sales are down. I'm sure, right. Their sales are down because people don't want to buy as much of their music as they used to. They are buying more of the independent stuff. And I think a lot of people as well are going to concerts more and, aren't listening to, as they might listen to stuff on iPods, but they're not listening to as much conventionally recorded music. They're just going to see gigs more.
Hey, Lee, do you think that the it's not necessarily the iPod generation that's hurting the music business as far as the labels are concerned, but it's, we have access to so much more entertainment nowadays? I mean, the computers, video games are... I mean, Grand Theft Auto, for instance, sold something like $50 million in their first week. That's for a video game. A movie would kill for an opening weekend like that. It's never happened. No movie has ever opened at $50 million. So do you think that we just have a lot more access to different forms of entertainment, and music is kind of competing with all of that now?
Yeah, working, when I was, when I was like 17 or 18, I worked at a record store, and I remember how important that was, sort of like the, you know, what kind of music you listen to, and going to the record store was like a social activity, and it was a fun place to be. I don't see people going into record stores anymore and trying to discover things, because I think the internet and the exposure to all this different media, I think people are getting to the point where they could use all these new tools to discover new things. And you know, there's still, you know, disposable income for, you know, somebody who buys like Grand Theft Auto. You're looking at that game, and you know, maybe you could have purchased other things. When I was a kid, I remember saving up money for blank floppy disks.
Yeah.
For my Atari 800, I remember it was like $50 a box, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to take a lot of chores and stuff to save that.
Mowing the lawns.
Yeah.
kids nowadays, I think they look at things a little differently, and they have to divide their time and their energy amongst other things. And I think there's a lot of different things competing for their money and their attention.
What do you think, Bill?
I think it's kind of two trends. It's what you said. Music is competing against more things, but at the same time, I think just by virtue of the way we've gone portable, there are more what I've called times that were formerly dead times, times that you can now listen to music. And yeah, you could take one cassette tape with you into the subway before while you're mowing the lawn, but now you want to have just a ton of music that you've bought. So I think despite that, I think the door is wide open for people to just get more and more music, because they got so many hours a day where they can listen to their own, have access to their entire library.
And, you know, I think that because of the other forms of entertainment kind of making a move on people's time, like Grand Theft Auto, that's also a really good opportunity for the music business, not necessarily the record labels, but the music yep. business, to reach other people. I'm listening to the radio while I'm playing that game, and I'm hearing bands that I've never heard of before. Now, there's a really neat feature, and I think Apple really missed the boat on this, maybe, potentially, that if you hear something in the game that you like, you can have your character pull out his cell phone, dial a number, right? And it actually will email to your account the name of the artist with a direct link to the MP3 Amazon so you could buy it right
now. Oh, that's cool.
Now that's a great feature that I think you're going to see more of. And games like Guitar Hero and Rock Band, that's all about music. How many bands had a song that's been dead for a few years or even a couple decades? They release it out there on Rock Band or Guitar Hero, and all of a sudden there's a whole brand new generation who's never heard of Blue Oyster Cult, but they're going out to buy the CD on iTunes because they really dug playing it on their video game. What do you think, Dave? Do you think that's a revenue stream?
Definitely, because that was exactly my experience. I got the Guitar Hero for the Wii, and there's probably three or four artists who put songs onto the Wii version of Guitar Hero 3, and I'd never heard them before, and I actually did go out and buy the albums because I really enjoyed the songs. So, you know, I think the industry does have to think about alternate ways to promote music, particularly back catalogue stuff. I think that's a very good way of doing it.
That's kind of funny because I was just having dinner with my brother-in-law and his wife, and they were saying they were just laughing because they're one of their younger kids was walking around the house humming a song, and he's like, "What song is that?" You know, it was from Van Halen or something that the kid would never have listened to on their own, but they listened to it on Guitar Hero.
Yeah,
and they learn how to, they're actually playing along with the song. I mean, you get a connection with the song if you're. Yeah, it's not really guitar playing, although in Rock Band it really is drum playing.
I think something else is also kind of happening too, which is something, you know, as we were talking, it had me think. When I was younger and I had the cassette deck in my car, I remember I would have three or four, maybe five cassettes, and I would listen to that music over and over, and I would really understand the music and get into it. Now I plug my iPod and my iPhone into the car, and I got 800 songs. I probably won't listen to the same album twice, ever.
Yeah. I'm absolutely with you there. There's stuff that I've bought off of iTunes and I've listened to it maybe once or twice, but because it's on a device that has 800 other songs or 8,000 other songs, if I've got it on a random play, which I usually do if I'm not listening to podcasts, I might not hear it for a couple months. I mean, you kind of forget about it.
Yeah, I think we got to blame Apple's products for having Shuffle.
Yeah,
but that's a great feature though. You know, and
gonna love it.
Talking about old stuff, I picked up the 80 gig classic last year, and my old 4 gig nano had just been sitting in the car, and my son saw it and was like, "Dad, can I have that?" I was like, "Yeah, go ahead." And he started listening to some stuff that was on that. He was like, "Man, who is this band? They're great." It was like, "It's the Rolling Stones." And it was from some of the early 70s stuff. And he was like, "Well, do you have any more of that?" As you know, guy, I've got 500 CDs downstairs of almost all 70s and 80s rock and roll bands. You know, just go through it, listen to it, drop it into iTunes, and you're good to go.
So I think the moral of your story, Guy, is that the new technology is allowing a whole new generation, not just through Guitar Hero and stuff like that, but from a hand-me-down iPod to discover new music.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look at it this way. When you know, I mean, I grew up in the 70s, and if somebody had tried to get me to listen to, like, old 50s rock and roll, I'd be like, "Oh, God, just, you know, get that away from me." But now, with digital reproduction, it sounds nearly new. It sounds new. So, and it doesn't deteriorate. You know, if somebody handed me a 1950s album and I tried to put it on an old record player, you know, it'd pop and skip and scratch, and I wouldn't be interested. But with a digital copy, it's never going to, you know, go bad.
We're overrunning our time for this segment, but I did want to say that this one's for Bill, and then we'll jump to the rest of you guys, Lee and Guy and David. But this one's for Bill. Do you think that the RIAA should really relax the usage of music and allow stuff like podcasts and television shows and movies to use the music royalty free and simply treat it as promotion. For instance, if we could play any music we wanted on this podcast, the bumpers between our different segments would be, you know, it could be The Who, it could be The Rolling Stones, it could be some rap song. I don't know any rap songs, I'm not going to say any. It could be almost anything. And it's simply promotion for them. Do you think that that would be a smart move on their part, or do you think that they really do need to keep an iron fist around the throats of music lovers?
I can tell you why they should loosen up, and I can tell you why they won't. I give you a quick analogy. The guy from Counting Crows decided that he was going to give away 2 MP3s from his new album before it came out. In addition to the iTunes single and the song that went to radio, he's going to give away these two songs that were never going to be released as singles anyway. The hardest rock song, the softest ballad. And the label said no, and he fought the label, and he never said it, but I think he would have walked away from the label and done a Nine Inch Nails if they hadn't. So finally they said, okay, go ahead. So he gives away these two songs, and they're convinced that he's just killing the album, but okay, go ahead and do it anyway, whatever, take your shot. He does it, and when the album comes out, it debuts at number one, not just in their genre, but number one overall, and stays there. So at least we know that it didn't hurt it, you know? And you have to assume it's the best Counting Crows selling album in I think, since their debut, so it's... You know, you can imply something there that giving away free music won't kill the album, and yeah, they, you know, you get it out there, and if they had taken it a step further and put it out there under Creative Commons or PodSafe and allowed people to actually use it and not just have it for personal use, you know, get it out in the hands of other people, we got a step further. So I think it does work, and I think, to me at least, the Counting Crows experiment was kind of proof positive of that. The reason why the RIA won't do it is because one of the biggest benefits of when you give away free music is that people will come and see you in concert, and the labels don't make any money from that. The RAA represents the labels, not the artist. Right. So the RAA has, you know, they're fighting on behalf of the labels, which is not the same thing as the artist. It's almost the opposite sometimes, and it'll just never happen.
And I think, don't you think, though, that Lee, that I never heard of the RIAA 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, yep. Really. Don't you think that this age of information is really hurting their case?
Yeah.
Now that we all have access to these horror stories of people getting sued and, you know, not being like the whole Bill Palmer story that he just said. I mean, we know about that. We never would have heard about that before.
Well, and I think also there's a weird thing that's happening too. I took a class one time on computers and the law, and my professor used to talk about something called the technico-legal revolution, where technology moves faster than the legal foundations. So there's like weird things that happen now. Like in the past, you bought a record, and I loaned it to you, Tim, and said, here you go, listen to it. And you listen to it, and you're like, yeah, this is great. But today, you got weird things that happen, like DRM music, where I can't like let you listen to it more than twice or three times, or there's rules around, you know, what format I could give it to you. I can't take a digital song I bought on a DRM song from a music service and sell it on eBay. And just weird things like that start to happen when you have this, when technology starts pushing the envelope when it comes to the legal foundations of, you know, how do you treat fair use? How does this stuff work? Like, who really owns it? And all these kind of questions that always pop up in my head.
And it never really catches up, does it? The law never really catches up to the technology standpoint, because by the time they do, the technology's
moved
on.
Yeah, yeah. They tell me back in the 60s when you used to fly in a plane from, like, say, New York to California, you would fly over a state that didn't have, it would be, you know, no drinking law. They would actually have to stop serving alcohol on the plane until they flew over that state. And, you know, nowadays we laugh and go, hey, you know, yeah, but back then, those were really tough decisions to make. You know, this plane was a new technology. You're flying above the earth. Are laws suspended if you fly, say, 20,000 feet up? Or what if you go out in space?
Yeah, that's
if you
a good
keep
point.
Going up higher and higher, when do the laws of the country you're above cease to exist?
Matter, right?
What do you think, David? Is the RIAA an antiquated body at this point?
I think they're fighting what they see as a rearguard action to defend their business model. I think what Bill says is absolutely right. You've got to remember their only interest is defending the label business, and that's what they're all about. I personally think that, you know, certainly looking at it from this side of the pond, their tactics are you know,
reprehensible.
Disgusting. Don't get me started. Some of the things you read on, I mean, Ars Technica is very good at following exactly what's going on.
Absolutely. It's my favorite website when it comes to the subject.
And yeah, some of the stunts they pull really are really are disgusting. And, you know, I don't think they're doing themselves or the labels any favors in the long run, because I think most people are intelligent enough to realize that, you know, it's all about trying to shut down people for not, you know, for doing something which isn't really causing the harm that they claim it is. I mean, you know, I'm not promoting piracy and saying that people don't deserve to be paid for the work they do, because they do. But yes, to turn around and say that you know, by downloading or by resharing a single song, they've caused thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage to the industry, it's just ridiculous. And by going after individuals, when you know that you can go to China or Singapore and places like that and see, you know, professionally produced pirated CDs being churned out for factories by the thousands, sold for, you know, a few dollars at a time, and they don't want to go after people like that because it's far too hard. It's much easier to go and you know, sue students. To me, is disgusting.
Guy, you're a father.
Yes.
You've taught your sons a lot of lessons and imparted a lot of wisdom on them as they're growing up, correct?
Okay. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Did you teach them to share?
Yes. Yes, I did.
So as a parent myself, how do you reconcile, yes, you can, you could share your toys, you could share this, but you can't share music. You can't share that.
Well, at the same time, you know, you've purchased a toy, and the kids are playing with the toys, and they share it back and forth with each other, and at the end of the day, you still have the toy.
What if you gave the toy to somebody else?
Well, but see, that's a little bit different thing. But the thing with music is you buy a song, and you have that song, you listen to that song, and then you make a copy of that song, you give it to someone else, but you still have the song. And the person that actually created the music, the engineers that helped to funnel the music into whatever form it's in, the artists who played on it, the companies that put up the money to make the music, they've received nothing in compensation for it. And, you know, they should. They should get something back for what they've put in.
But
and
isn't
that's
the age-old...
That's the problem with digital music.
But isn't that the age-old question of they wouldn't have made anything anyways because the person getting it would never have bought a copy?
Well, it doesn't matter. If they weren't going to buy a copy, then they shouldn't have it anyway.
But then isn't it... Couldn't you make the argument that now that they have a copy of this particular song that they shared, they're more apt to go buy the rest of the album themselves?
If that was true, but I mean, let's face it, if you got hardcore pirates, it doesn't matter whether they like it, love it, hate it, despise it, they're not going to go out and buy it.
But isn't it true, Bill Palmer, that at the height of Napster, when music piracy was huge, it was bigger then than it ever has been, CD sales were at an all-time high?
Most people I know that steal large amounts of music or pirate them or whatever we call are not big music listeners anyway. That's their hobby. You like to play video games. They like to steal music just to see what they can amass. They don't really listen to this whole...
Yeah,
this whole thing about
cards.
How they're supposedly burning CDs and selling them on college campuses. Maybe I'm too old or something, but I really think that's just something they made up, how supporting drug dealers or whatever this crap is that they...
Pirating music is directly sponsoring Osama bin Laden. Let's not argue that point. We all know it's true, right, Lee?
You know that Osama's always on Napster.
That's right. He's on Napster still.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're going to change anything by our conversation, but I think it's very interesting. I think that the iPod generation is in some indirect way hurting hi-fi sales. I had a conversation with, I'm not going to give the company's name, but he represents a very high-end speaker manufacturer. They were very interested in having a new set of speakers that came out maybe 8 months ago and selling extremely well for them. They cost $1,000 a piece, and of course you can only buy them in a pair, so that's right. $2,000 right there for just two pair of speakers. They're really interested in getting their product in front of our audience. The problem was that these are hi-fi speakers. They're not powered. You can't plug an iPod into them. You can't plug your computer into them unless you use Lee's solution by using, you know, what is it called again, Lee? The AirTunes.
Yep.
So I told him, I said, you know, if you want to send these speakers to me for a review, I'd be happy to review them as long as I can keep them. No, I didn't say that because I've got a pair of Paradigms that I'm completely happy with. And so I got into a long conversation with him, and he was acting on behalf of the company because he actually called me back about this because they wanted to get my they said expert opinion, but they wanted to know what they could do to get their speakers sold to the iPod generation. And that's what they called it, the iPod generation. And I said, well, number one, they can't be $1,000 a piece. That's number one. Number two, give them quality. Let them plug them into their speakers or their iPod. Make it so it has an iPod dock built right in. And you'll sell them the product. And that's really as long as it sounds great and it's affordable. But I don't think that the average iPod user is interested in spending $1,000 for one speaker. Do you think I'm wrong, Lee?
Yeah, the iPod generation is, you know, like I said before, they're not willing to make that big investment like we would have done back in the 80s. But, yeah, definitely they're looking at other things. They want to spend their money on other places and activities. So, yeah, definitely.
Do you think, Bill, that it's a sign of progress and it's something good that a speaker manufacturer like that is coming to someone like me asking questions of how they can get into, you know, our demographic?
Yeah, I mean, at least they're starting to realize that they don't know what they don't know, but they realize that there's something they don't know, and that's always the first step.
What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised they want to sell speakers to iPod users because, you know, once about 80, 90 million iPods sold.
Something like that.
So that's a much bigger market than the hi-fi market ever was. So, you know, if they can sell something, even if it's half the price, it's $500 and they're still making a margin on it and they can sell many more units, they're going to be quids in. The only risk with you know, selling high-end hi-fi to iPod users is it can, you know, the really high-end audio can really show up some of the limitations of one.
It exposes the music. It, absolutely. What do you think, Guy? Are you interested in a $500 pair of speakers that you can use on your computer?
No, not really. I think my days of spending a lot of money on speakers is done.
Do you think that your kids in a couple years would be interested in something like that, or do you think that they're one of the good enough generation?
Right now, I think they're part of the good enough generation. But, you know, a technology is always evolving. You know, we went from analog recordings to AIFFs to now MP3s and AACs. And, you know, who's to say if the next codec will bring back the richness of that sound?
Very true. Anybody got any parting thoughts on this subject? Let's start with Bill.
I'd be happy to have a $500 speaker system, but it better be small enough to complement my MacBook, because every computer I buy keeps getting smaller than the last one. The thing I see with the big speaker systems that they send me for review, the ones I don't keep, and like you can take it back, is they're just too darn big, no matter how good they sound.
Yeah. So, Lee.
Yeah.
Parting thoughts?
Well, one interesting thing, as we were talking about RIAA, I noticed they lost a suit today. I think a woman actually countersued and actually won close to $108,000 from them.
Yeah, it'd be surprising to find out how much she's going to end up with and how much the lawyers get.
Yeah, it was mostly, I think the legal lawyer fees. Was quoting like $325 an hour for legal fees.
Yeah,
but I think it's setting a legal precedence, which is probably more important to the population
right,
in general
than the money.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
That's why she did it. She chased them really hard because she wanted to get the precedent set.
And I think that's important. I think that we have to have some user rights that are just as strong as the rights of the copyright holders. I think that our rights as listeners of the music should not take a back seat to the almighty dollar that the record company may or may not lost. I'm hoping that that's going to be a lesson. Do you think that's going to be a lesson that they're going to learn, Lee?
Yeah, I think they're going to learn in any business when you treat your customers as suspects. It's not going to be something you can sustain forever.
Guy, any parting thoughts?
No, I'm good, man.
David?
I think just go back to your original premise.
I have a headache. We're going to start calling Guy Guy Dvorak. Guy Dvorak is Guy's name now. I got
yeah, but I'm so much more pleasant than he is.
David Cohen, go ahead.
Going back to your original premise about, you know, who's going to buy hi-fi in the future, I think you will find people buying hi-fi for their TV, but not to listen to music, but to watch their movies with. And get surround sound.
I think that's at least that's happened with me. To wrap up the show, let's start with Bill Palmer. Bill Palmer, iProg Magazine. Can you give us any hints on what we can expect in the future?
Yeah.
You don't have to give away any big, you know, interviews or anything like that, obviously.
Alanis,
or if you want to.
Wow. Alanis Morissette is on our June 10th cover. How's that for an exclusive?
Wow, really?
Yeah, nobody knows that yet except the My Mac listeners.
You know, Alanis Morissette is God.
Yeah, she played God in the movie Dogma. Yes.
In Dogma.
Yes.
It's God. So Bill Palmer is going to have God on the cover of iProng. That's cool. I really like Alanis Morissette. I've dug her music since she first came out, and I'm glad she's still recording out there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the day her new album comes out, so I'm
the day the album comes out, you have her on the cover of your magazine in an interview.
You know what? I'll just say this: it's I don't think it's really so much about us. It's just respect for the digital generation, the fact that we're a magazine for iPod users, and we don't have a print version, and you know, major label artists will give us these stories. It's kind of like
that's
you
awesome,
getting
man.
The you know the high end stereo guy asking you questions. They're starting to respect us now.
I think that's pretty cool. Lee Gibbons,
yeah.
You got to promote America Online. You spent all these years creating this one version for the Mac users out there. It's out. I've downloaded. I've used it. I've got to say, the web browser in the new AOL client is really fast.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time. One of the things that, if anyone's used the older AOL client for Mac, the browser was based on Gecko, and it was getting kind of old, and it had problems like rendering simple websites, and we wanted to make sure that we'd never have that problem again. So building AOL Desktop for Mac on top of the WebKit engine, we will guarantee that you know your browser will never become obsolete. We keep...
It's fast. Yeah. It's really fast.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole client seems very peppy. I mean, it's like... It's a turboed or something. I mean, it's really quick.
So our goal right now is to take a look at the landscape. We needed to get out there, just get a new client out there so that our current users who've been slogging through the old, you know, software that's been around for 5 years would have something new to work on, and we could build this as a foundation. So today I just finished, you know, working with my team and scoping out what we're going to do for the next couple of versions, and I'll be sharing as soon as we get some of these betas out the door.
Oh, excellent.
Let us know, man. We definitely like to get the inside scoop here at My Mac Magazine's podcast. Guys,
Cyril, yes.
Anything coming up on the site from you?
No, I still need to get some more of the iWeb stuff done.
Right.
I got to get the iWeb done. I'm currently working with both Sandvox and Rapid Weaver, putting together sites using that software, and hopefully I'll be writing something on that pretty soon. And other than that, just you know the typical nonsense that comes out of my head over on the blog side.
What's coming up from you, David?
I'll be working on a new Fenestration column this week. And, you know, as I've said before, Fenestration has gone from the podcast, and I've turned it back into a print column to reflect our My Mac magazine status. And
I like it in print, by the way. I think it really works.
Yeah,
well,
I
there.
Agree with you. I think it works better. I can certainly cover topics in a bit more depth than I ever could on the spoken version. So we'll be looking at the latest announcements from Microsoft in terms of Office 2008. They've just launched Service Pack 1, and also they've talked about what might be in the next version of Office, and they're going to bring back some things they dropped. So we shall be discussing that in a little bit more detail.
Of course, right underneath this podcast at mymac.com is a review from David Cohen of Mail Steward. It's a good way to kind of offload your mail from the mail application and store it elsewhere. It works pretty good
Absolutely.
For you.
Absolutely. It's a really great program to, you know, mail can kind of slow down mail.app if you've got quite a few thousand messages in there. And this is a very nice way of archiving it off, still being able to read that mail, but speed up your mail.app client.
Donnie Yankelo did a review of the ITV 250 Plus. You can check that out at mymac.com. Two missing manual book reviews from David Weeks. I did a review of the, finally got it posted, the Razer Destructor Professional Gaming.
That was making me laugh.
Destructor!
It's a nice product. I'm using it. It's on my desk right now. I really like it. I'm quite impressed with it. And it has a hard case that if I ever have to take it anywhere, it's protected. I don't know why I need a case for a gaming mat, but there you go. And Rich Lefko has two Kinniston product reviews for Road Warriors. That's definitely worth reading. A lot of other stuff going up on the blog side of mymac.com. We got to wrap this podcast up because we're way over. We're about an hour and a half. We did, yeah, it's been a long podcast. We do want to thank Otherworld Computing for sponsoring the
great
podcast
guys
this week, and as well as the website. We want to thank Sam Levin for the beginning of the show, coming on with his cool Mac picks, and bringing out a really cool product for giveaway. I mean, a $120 jacket. You can't beat that. That's
awesome. Think I'm going to get one of those jackets. Just the fact that they make it in my size.
So if you want to enter that contest, it's a Scott E. Vest Essentials jacket. It's worth $120. Simply send an email to tim@mymac.com.
Can I send an application?
And, no, you're not eligible, man. Sorry. check out AOL's new client for the Macintosh, and we thank Lee for keeping us informed on that every week. Thanks, Lee.
Yeah, I hope we could talk a little more about iPhone apps in the coming weeks.
Real soon, I think. Yeah, definitely. And, of course, Bill Palmer, we want to thank you for coming on and hanging out with us. And a lot of the people listening to the show, I hope they all go up to iProng.com, subscribe to the magazine through iTunes, and it's a good read every week, man. And, of course, we do have a work – I'm a little biased because we have a working relationship with Bill. A lot of our reviews that focus on iPod or iPhone or what have you shows up in iProng magazine. So it's great working with you there,
hey,
Bill.
Thanks. Said that. I'm embarrassed now. I'm tongue-tied. You got me.
So that's the show this week. And so for David, Guy, Bill, Lee, and me, Tim, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.